Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. Had a great visit with Bob Myers, our new teammate at ESPN, of course, the former president of the Golden State Warriors, two-time executive of the year in the NBA, and architect of a run of four NBA championships before he stepped down after last season. But Bob's obviously here with us on NBA Countdown now. He'll be with us all season. He'll be doing some games this year as an analyst, I think, along with Dave. He did one with Dave Pasch in the preseason. I think he's working with Dave again, but we've already had a lot of fun with Bob, Stephen A., Michael Wilbon, and, of course, our new Countdown host, Malika Andrews. But great visit with Bob, talking about the start of this season, the Harden situation in Philadelphia, how he might handle it as an executive. And we talked a little bit about what the new era of NBA free agency and player movement might look like and how it's going to evolve with the new salary cap and just the way the league is evolving. So fun visit with Bob Myers. I know we'll do it again this season, but he's always a great guest. He's always very candid with his thoughts about team building, about every situation that might come up around the team. So here's my visit with Bob Myers. All right, so Bob, we watch these games here at NBA Countdown after we do the pregame show, right? We got a whole bank of televisions. We got all the night's action going on. Wednesday night we had 8, 9, 10 games going on at once, and you're watching these games, Bob, and for the first time you're doing it without having a team. You're no longer the president of the Golden State Warriors, but you're just there watching them. You're watching Orlando, you're watching Cleveland. What's that like to do now?
It's peaceful. It was great. Look, 12 years of having just everything in it, right? The adrenaline, the competitiveness, the angst, which was great for the time I did it. But I haven't watched an NBA game without emotion, without real kind of pain, joy, all of it in between, frustration, in a long time. And I love the game. I love watching basketball. But to watch so many games at once, I couldn't help but think about my peers and what was going through their minds. Game one, whatever happens, you overreact to it, right? So if you lose game one, you think, well, maybe I didn't do the right roster. If you win, you think we nailed it in the draft or free agency. But for me, at least this time in my life, I guess the easiest thing to say is it felt right to be where I'm at. I'm supposed to be where I'm at right now.
Yeah, that's... It's funny, different GMs around the league watch the games. Some sit courtside, some stand in the tunnel, some sit back in their office, some have to sit with the owner, some don't sit with the owner. And like you said, especially opening night, you're living and dying with, because there is overreaction and your owner's excited and you got a sold out building, you're at home, or you're on the road and you're getting blown out, right? It's there's going to be another one coming quick, but it's still opening night.
Yeah, and there's a helplessness to it, right? I prided myself when I think one time in 12 years did I leave a game because it was too much emotionally. I think it was a finals game in Oakland, and I'm not proud of it, but I'm sure a lot of GMs or people, at least they would understand. Some GMs do it all the time. I know Jerry West would that was his habitual method for dealing with it. But I realized I'm in this job. I'm going to be in the building for whatever happens, good, bad. Because if something great were to happen, which I was lucky enough to see a lot of that, I want to see it. I don't want to be in the parking lot or away when something really good happens and feel like this is what we do it all for and I missed it. So you have to risk dealing with the pain if you lose. So
I don't think any fans ever really saw that until Moneyball with Billy Bean, yeah. Right? Billy Bean, yeah. Who you know, a friend, yeah, of yours, right? Yeah. I don't know. Think people realize he sort of lived that. He didn't want to be in the ballpark.
That movie is so good. at characterizing the life of a general manager. When he's in the car turning his radio on and off, and a lot of people watching that movie are probably kind of like, this isn't real. That is ask any general manager in any sport, is that real? Is that something that happens? And it absolutely does. When he's in the weight room and looking at, text me if anything happens. And it's like this torturous way of living and going through it. But there's nothing like the adrenaline of the job. But certainly that movie was so good at showing kind of an inside look into the life of it.
Well, you are with us at ESPN now, Bob. NBA Countdown opening week, we're here in New York. And then we'll pick up again with your group, with Stephen A., Michael Wilbon, Malika, at the in-season tournament in Vegas, right? So that'll be when we pick up again, which is a month away. So it's pretty good life. You work a week and now you bail for a month here.
That's not true. I have responsibilities. I'm doing a game in between there.
That's right.
I got a game. And, you know, I have other stuff that I'm probably going to do too. I just don't know what it is.
All right, Bob. So let's look at the James Harden situation now in Philadelphia. The league, as we reported, is looking with this new player participation policy, right? The league has got to evaluate whether the Sixers should have had Harden on the floor or should have had him on the trip for a national TV game against the Bucks on Thursday. And so the league's got to, we're going to hear about this all season long. Let's start there with James Harden. The position that the league is in, the team is in, listen, this is not what the player participation rule was put in place for, this whole Harden situation. It's not an injury. It is not rest. It's a player who has not really played enough in the preseason to start up on opening night. But what do you make of where this thing is right now?
Lot to unpack here. I think, one, the league is at least signifying they're going to take this seriously. I think you said it well, though, that just because they're looking at it doesn't mean they're going to do anything about it. But I think they want to send some kind of message of we're serious about player participation. Agree with you in that I don't know that this falls into the category they're trying to oversee. This is more of, look, star player not playing, let's find out what's going on. And I think they're saying to the rest of the league, we are going to monitor this. We're going to take it seriously. Coming from that world of trying to get players healthy, I do think that Philly is operating on the up and up here with trying to get a player back who's trying to get in shape. Traveling with the team is usually not the right approach to getting a player up to speed, getting him healthy, getting him ready to go. It's usually better in your facility. When the NBA teams travel, your hotel, your bus rides, your cramped spaces, you don't have the same access to treatment rooms, you don't have the same access to recovery. And so the idea that it was better for Harden to stay in Philly makes a ton of sense to me. And add to it what you reported, which is he offered to go. So this isn't, and I don't think Philly told him not to go for any reason, but we want you to play, and the best way for you to play is to go back to the facility and get in shape. So I don't see any subterfuge here. I don't see anything that the league would say, hey, you're in violation of something. Now, they certainly could, but based on the facts you're reporting and based on what I know of how things usually work and how I would answer that question if the league was looking into something that I was in charge of as president of basketball ops, I find that this is more of the league saying, we're going to examine all these things every time, even if they don't fall clearly under the line of player participation as it was stated in the rules.
Are these big enough financial incentives for a contending team that really wants to protect their championship hopes? Will teams just pay these fines and let themselves get hit if that rest and these games fall on nights where they feel like it's going to help us later? Are they going to pay? They'll pay $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, let this thing escalate?
No, that's no. A lot of money. I mean, I don't care how much money you have. That, look, will there be times where a team or an organization, an ownership group, a GM, a coach, a training staff are fully aligned, a star player saying, I don't care what the league does. We're doing the right thing here. They think we're skirting the rules. We're not. We're going to take a principled position here. And if they fine us, they fine us, but we're not doing anything wrong. To your point of, are they going to kind of
in a way that flippant way, say, who cares if we get fined? We're doing this. I don't see that happening. These numbers are big.
And I think there's going to be a lot of peer pressure among owners. We pass this for a reason. We are trying to negotiate a big TV deal. There is some peer pressure there,
now,
too,
what
right?
Will be, 100%. What will be interesting is I wonder what will happen when there's a heavy discussion amongst an organization and it's 50-50 if a guy can go or not. And they choose to go based on the rules and the player gets hurt. That'll be interesting because there are times where it's a close call, right? It's a close call oftentimes in the last 3, 4, 5 years. And it's not what maybe people think where you're blatantly saying, I don't care what anybody says, we're not playing Steph Curry. Oftentimes it's more of what's the risk reward, right? This guy's running in the red. He's at a certain age. He's coming off an overtime game. It's a back-to-back. What's the right thing to do? And the player says, I want to play sometimes, or the player says, it's up to you, or the coach says, don't, or the GM says, yes, and the trainer says, what do you think? And it's collaborative, and you decide to green light it, and the guy gets hurt. And I'm wondering if that happens, does somebody say, well, we did that, we complied, and now this player's out for 2 weeks. So that's the thing that I don't know how it'll go, but I do like the fact that the league is pushing for this. I like the fact that the owners are pushing for it. And I like the fact that the players push for it. The most important thing, though, at least in the West, there's never been a more competitive Western Conference. It was never this competitive when I was there for the last 12 years. So there's also a motivation of, we can't just kick a game anymore. It's too jumbled up. Now, if somebody has a 10-game lead and there's a week to go and they're kind of like, look, we got nothing to gain here except for an injury. That's another kind of one of those one-offs that they're going to have to navigate.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Bob, is there... Philly played well. Tyrese Maxey played really well. Embiid was Embiid. Opening night, Kelly Oubre, who played for you in Golden State for a season, had a great debut with the Sixers, almost pulled one out in Milwaukee. Let's say Philly plays really well and Harden doesn't come back right away and they're playing at a pretty high level, or Harden's in and out a little bit early, but they're playing really well without him. Does that create leverage? Who does that create leverage for?
I don't know that at any. I would flip that question on its head and say if they're playing really poorly, or vice versa in this scenario.
If they're playing poorly,
if they're playing poorly, they might say we got to get him back, and we're not trading him, or we might stay where we're at and say if we're going to move this guy, we got to get something back good. We need real help here. But the bigger question is the Clippers. If they're the team and you're dialed in as anybody, if they're the one team that is interested in James Harden, they're the record to watch. Because they're the team, if they're playing great, that's not going to get desperate. They're the team, if they're not playing great, that may up their offer. I think Philly can kind of sit there and say, we've got this guy, he's ramping it up, we don't have a good deal, we're okay if he comes back, we'll let him take his time, we're not feeling any pressure. It's more about the inverse of if things aren't going well. And I think that, like I said, more the Clippers. If the Clippers start out 7-1, Lawrence Frank isn't going to start panicking about making a move or certainly up his offer. So who's going to give on their ask? Who's going to change the offer? And usually when you change an offer, It's because things are not going well and you feel like you have to do something.
If you're James Harden and you want to get traded, you know Daryl Morey doesn't want to trade him. They know in the end, to win this season, there may not be a trade out there that gets them back a player who helps them win more if Harden is engaged. So if he comes out and plays hard, it plays really well, and it's going well, could you see in Harden's head where it would be, that's going to just keep me here? They're going to go, well, you're engaged, you're playing hard, we're winning. That isn't, oh, hey, Phil, the Clippers might up. I don't know if the Clippers are going to up their offer, but Clippers make an offer or even become more aggressive. You still know, like, it's going
to
be.
I think what you're asking is, what is Harden's motivation to play well?
Yeah.
Right? What's his motivation to play well?
That it may keep him there versus get him sent out.
So you're saying, in his circle, in his own mind, why would he comply? And I guess the question is, it feels like his back's against the wall. And he doesn't have a choice right now. It feels like he's pushed pretty hard and made his frustrations public, not shown up, not been compliant with a lot of the things. But in the last 48 hours, showed up. He acquiesced to them saying, get to the facility. I have no idea if he's working hard, but all assumptions are that he's doing what they ask him to do. It may be that James Harden's saying, I made a play. It didn't work. I'm going to see. Maybe he's saying, I'm going to see how the next 2 weeks go for me. I may say privately, I'm going to come play for the next 2-3 weeks. But after that, whatever. I have no idea. I mean, I cannot get in the mind of an NBA player. But I do know this. These things change all the time. Kevin Durant had a very public trade demand. But then he came back and played and said, I'm going to play all year. Then he gets traded to Phoenix. I don't think if Kyrie had asked for a trade, Kevin would have asked for a trade. So this is why your job and what our job is now is so, I guess, interesting to people is hang on and see what's going on next week because you just don't know. And these things change daily.
The pressure on the Sixers organization, Bob, to keep Joel Embiid on board with this, is that if you're running the Sixers, that's the question you're asking every day. And I think Daryl Morey's done plenty of it. Here's what a trade would look like. Here's what we would get back. Here's what I think we could get out in the marketplace, because the trade from the Clippers isn't going to bring us back anything to help us win right now. We're looking to get their picks or their assets to flip them somewhere else. Who knows what the kind of player Philly wants to acquire? Everybody in the league, if there's a great player available, everybody wants. There's a lot of teams are going to try to get better. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed of getting him or he even becomes available. That's what you're trying to sell to Joel the whole time here, to tell him to hang on, right?
Well, look, every general manager, every organization, every owner, coach is under pressure when you have a top 10, 15 player. And here's how it works. You're lucky. However you get him, that's fantastic. Great. You drafted him. You traded for him. However you did it. And then you got him. And then you're lucky and you say, we've got this player that can be the best player on a championship team. And there may be 10 of those guys in the league. And then you navigate the waters with them and you make the playoffs and then you lose. You make the second round. You make the Western, Eastern Conference Finals. You make trades. Make drafts. And after an amount of time, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's five, maybe it's six, and for whatever reason, you're that star player and you say, you know what? I rode this wave with you for 8 years or 9 years or whatever. It didn't work. I don't care why. It doesn't matter. We're not doing well. The reasons don't matter anymore. So I'm looking somewhere else. That's not just Philly. That's any place. That's just the responsibilities and the world we live in. Some players, even Lillard, who said for many years, I'm not leaving here. Finally, after Trailblazers draft a young player, don't make the trade. He says, it's over. I tried, and I can't get in his head. And he says, I'm done. And the reasons aren't even important anymore.
Last thing, Bob, along those lines. Listen, it was a huge part of your run in Golden State was signing Kevin Durant as a free agent. And then Kevin Durant leaving as a free agent the same year Kyrie Irving was leaving and going, you know, both of them went to Brooklyn. Is it possible we may not see players of that caliber and that stature enter free agency anymore? That we're in a place where You just are going to sign the extension where you are for the most money you can get. And then when you're ready to leave, you're just going to ask for a trade. That we may not see guys get to the end of their contracts like that. That it is, it'll be that second tier player in free agency.
Well, the delta now between signing with your own team and another team is huge, right? You're talking $50, $60 million. And the model of asking out seems to be working for many players.
It's the portal. I'm entering the portal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's, look, you and I might disagree on one point. You think that a player can ask, no matter how many years they have left, out. And I guess we could argue about that. What I would say is, what is probably more the trend is, as a player approaches a player option year or 1 year left, that's the moment in time where that GM has to think about it and say, what are the chances of me keeping this player? So if you're ex-player and you come to my office and or your agent, and you say, listen, you can't say it publicly because you get fined. And you say privately, look, I'm out of here at the end of this contract. So FYI, and these are the teams I want to go to. And you go, well, don't give me one team. Give me as many as you can if you really want to do this. But your choice as a general manager then is to say, I don't believe you, and roll the dice. And that's a scenario we get to free agency. But as the season unfolds, even as you get to the trade deadline, you start thinking, am I really going to risk it? Right? Am I really going to risk it and say, go ahead, go try free agency? Not any GMs have taken it there either. So it's not just the players. No GM has said, okay, I'll call you on that one and go ahead and see if you can get it in free agency with one or two teams that has cap space.
Right, right. And that's it. And we're in a world in the NBA where typically the teams, if I'm a great player and I'm going to sign into cap space, it's probably not a really good team.
I'll tell you what may be different, though. With this second apron, I think GMs are going to be more discerning about giving out money.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be an eye-opener for a lot of agents and players as far as this automatic max player designation. I don't know when it's going to happen, but we're not too far from a team saying, I will not give you the max. So let's say it's $50 million for said player. I'll give you $42. And then the player's going to say, well, I'm not signing that. And then you say, well, there's nobody out there that has $50 million in cap space. So I don't know that we're too far off from players still signing huge deals, but GM saying, I'm not giving you, I'm just going to give you a max contract.
And it may be players signing those max deals in markets they wouldn't have wanted to maybe do it before. If I'm going, that you're going to have to chase the cap space and the money to get paid, which is what the league wanted, right? They wanted to spread the talent around. They wanted in Golden State, you know, that Jordan, I'm just using Jordan Poole as an example, where you guys were willing and able to go deep and deep in the luxury tax to say, no, we want that fourth great player or fourth $30 million a year player. We want him in Charlotte or Indiana or wherever. That was a big part of the goal of this. And
yeah,
and that's they're probably going to get there.
Yeah, right? And I mean, Poole, pick a player. But yeah. I've said this, I think we're heading more towards a kind of two-headed monster than a three-headed monster on teams as far as these triple max or three-star systems. Big three. I think it's going to become the big two. And then the question really is, who are your big two? But I do believe what I said previously, which is the era of, hey, I'm a max, even the way you talk about a max player, or I think about a max player, I do think we're more headed towards, as the money gets as big as it gets, but I'll be curious to see what GM holds that line first and says, I don't, yeah, under the old system, you were, and I'll still give you 45. I'm just not giving you 52. And that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Bob, you have work to do here at the Seaport Studios. Thank you for taking time. Enjoy your month off for your month and one game.
I know stuff one going game. On. I'm busy. I got stuff. I just don't want to say it publicly.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you, of course, to my guest, ESPN's new NBA analyst, Bob Myers. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure also to listen to the Adam Schefter podcast with the great Adam Schefter. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.